Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Fantasy Sports Today.
Welcome back for hour number three of FST. Thanks for joining us on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, on TuneIn, on iHeartRadio, or wherever else you might be listening to us. Send out that Emery Hunt email. Sean Engel is cutting it up. We'll tweet it out so you can listen to his draft analysis. We'll be doing some more draft coverage. I'll be involved in that draft coverage. We'll be doing a mock draft. We'll do some live coverage the night of. It's usually a festive occasion, I think. The NFL's done a really good job with it recently, and they're having it in Nashville this year, so it's going to be one big party, and we'll try to extend that party to our airwaves. So a bit of news. Joe just chatted over to me during the break. Joe, what is that about Hunter Strickland?
Yeah, he blew a save last night for the Mariners, and now he's saying that he's got some issues where he's going to have an MRI done. So this is an interesting situation because, you know, he was the toast of the town when games in Japan had back-to-back saves. So, yeah. I mean, nobody expected him to, have an amazing season. He's probably a guy that would have been traded close to the trade deadline, and then he wouldn't be a closer anymore on his new team. But this is concerning because now they're saying that maybe there could be a closer by committee situation brewing in Seattle.
Well, once they unloaded Edwin Diaz, I think a lot of arms went up in the air to potentially get saves in Seattle. So I think you're right, but it is just something to be mindful of because you mentioned earlier in the show about George Kurtz and the closer report. He does a lot of work trying to map out what you need to do in fantasy baseball as far as closers are concerned. About half of the teams each year, whoever their closer is in April, he ain't the closer by the All-Star break for the most part. That's about half the teams go through some sort of change, whether due to injury or trades, to your point, roles shifting around. It's why people try to jump on those top closers this year, Edwin Diaz or Aldis Chapman. I have Chapman. I have Wade Davis. I feel pretty good about those guys.
Jansen from the Dodgers.
That's right. Kenley Jansen. Exactly right. So it's why people try to jump on those guys early so that they don't have to worry about losing out on a transaction at some point. Those transactions get, there's a lot. There's bidding wars. There's all kinds of other stuff, and you can never guarantee it. So trying to lock in on some of those top closers is important. But you can also go the other route. I just loaded up on guys that towards the end of the draft for me, Joe. I loaded up on those guys like I mentioned earlier, Green and Vizcaino. I'll just try to eat before Memorial Day, and then let the chips fall where they may. And I'll probably have different players on the roster at that point.
Yeah, that's a great strategy to have. And in the league that we're in together, you mentioned the Pit. It's a league where not only are you getting saves as a category, but they combine it with holds. So it was so important to get guys, that are basically set up the closer. So, Jacob Barnes is a guy from – and, hey – he's from Milwaukee. Go figure. And he's on my team.
Yeah, you love the Brewers.
But, he's a guy that could end up, getting a couple of save situations as well. Taylor Rogers is a guy that unexpectedly got a save for the Twins. And it just seems that more and more, there are more and more teams. It's almost like we hate the running back by committee in football, but it seems that more and more managers. I guess they have so much information at their fingertips. And in a way, why not, you know, use more than one person as a closer as game situations warrant? It sucks for fantasy, though.
Yes, it does. It does suck for fantasy because there is an unpredictable nature to it. I think, look, us as baseball analysts, fantasy analysts, and fans saw these trends coming, but it was obviously put on the big stage a couple of years ago. Indians Cubs World Series. Guys were being used for multiple innings. They were being moved all over the game. Andrew Miller would come in the third if they weren't feeling good about the starter. And this has morphed into teams like the A's and clearly the Rays just using openers, right? Guys will go out there, throw a couple of innings, we'll piece it together with the bullpen. My concern with some of these strategies over the long haul, and I think the Rays don't really care, is you're going to need a lot of arms to do that, right? Because you can burn out some of these guys by throwing them out there so much. You'd almost need a stable of 20 major league pitchers in order to enact that strategy throughout the year. But who the hell am I to argue with that they won 90 games last year? I think people don't even realize that. They won 90 games. They were just overshadowed so badly. And by the way, they did it in a division with the two best teams in baseball who both won 100 games.
Great point,
So
You know, we had talked about, we kind of alluded to, you know, a slowdown in free agent signings and whatnot. But every December, it just seems that it's the relief pitchers that end up, you know, getting signed to contracts and getting traded. You know, they seem to have the most activity. And it could be a sign of what's been going on in terms of, you know, a closer by committee.
Gosh, I lost my question, so I'm just going to scramble. I had a really specific question for you related to that. So, So, given that teams are doing this, and given that you said it does suck for fantasy, how has that made you sort of adjust an approach to drafts or to how you are tracking your roster throughout the season? The fact that these players are used differently within games, how has it made you adjust? Have you focused less on a strategy regarding pitchers, or have you specifically ramped up the known starters throughout Major League Baseball?
Well, people that know me for a long time, and George Kurtz probably wouldn't be happy, but when I first started playing fantasy, eventually I stopped even, you know, rostering closers. This is back in the 90s, you know, because, you know, I played in 5x5 leagues, and I felt that, you know, a closer could – I know they help you in ERA and whip and whatnot, but for the most part, they're not helping you as much in the win category, the strikeout category, as let's say a you know, starting pitcher would. You know, but I've kind of adjusted, and I've you know, now I do roster closer. And by the way, you know, I played in a league where eventually, you know, I had two or three copycats because I was fairly successful doing that. You know, because look, if you're going to take that kind of strategy, then you damn well better win the wins category and the strikeouts category, or you know, be top two or three, right? So lately I have been obviously drafting closers, but it might make me at least get one solid guy. Like I'll probably never get like a you know, a Chapman or a Jansen. They just go too early for me. But a Doolittle from the Nationals, a guy that you know, is in no danger of losing his job. You know, that's somebody I had targeted this season. Blake Treinen was a guy that I liked this year. You know, guys that, you know, I'm now thinking about it now, at the little slow start that the A's have gotten to. I hope he doesn't get traded and he ends up being a, you know, a setup guy. But, you know, then at the end, you know, you'd be surprised, even though it was known to most people, I was even getting Matt Barnes really, really late, you know, and
I got him very late.
You know, Yeah. And, you know, you also focused, my focus also was on, let's say, closers from bad teams. You mentioned Shane Green, you know, the guys that, you know, they're there late in your drafts and they could at least give you a cushion on the saves category, you know, early on.
Look, like I just said, half of these guys are going to lose their jobs for one reason or another, injury, trade, whatever. So your roster isn't going to look the same 2 months from now, 3 months from now. It won't look the same. So just know that and take some chances on guys late, and it's fine. You can cut them. People, I think there's a fine line between patience and erratic waiver wire behavior. I try to be patient, but I do that with the full knowledge of knowing you have to move on at some point and that this roster will look different. Anybody that thinks that they're such an ace in drafting in any fantasy sport that they're going to be able to keep their team intact is, you know, smoking the good stuff. So they just need to be mindful of the fact that these rosters change across all sports and baseball in particular. There's just going to be a level of churn that you have to deal with.
Yeah. And, you know, I kind of alluded to it earlier, you know, the baseball, fantasy baseball is a marathon, you know, fantasy football, I'm sure you've heard it say, is like a sprint. I mean, it's a long season and the draft is, you know, just the early part of it right now. It now if you're in a league with trades, you need to, you know, it's too early the season, but you need to. You know,
by the way, I'm getting Yoan Moncada offers. I drafted him and the draft room nearly exploded because apparently three people had been eyeing him when I took him, and I've already got offers for him. And I don't see any reason to trade somebody like that this early. We're obviously all thinking there could be a breakout season for him and being the top prospect in baseball at one point. So that's the deal. Just wanted to get your thoughts on that. We got some good guys going today, but I'll even take a look back at last night because I just want to get your thoughts on some of these players. So the Rays took out the Astros 4-2. Charlie Morton throws for Tampa against his old team. He picks up the win, a typical Charlie Morton win, 5 innings solid, 2 earned runs, 8 strikeouts. That's who Charlie Morton is, and he match for what the Rays want to do. If he goes out there and throws 5 innings every time, which is sort of what Charlie Morton does, they'll be happy with it. So he gets the win and a good start for Charlie Morton.
Yeah, he's a guy that has kind of figured it out late in his career, right? And, you know, you mentioned the 5 innings he's pitched, but he gives you strikeouts now. You know, he turned into a strikeout pitcher, you know, past 3 years, averaging just about 10 strikeouts per 9, gave you 8 strikeouts on 5 innings. You know, I think I own him on at least one of my teams, a solid starter. And, you know, 167 innings last year. I know he's a, you know, what do you think about this whole, once you're past 30, where we just ignore, you know, fantasy baseball players. But it's amazing how guys like him and Verlander, they found out they could, how to get it done late in their career again. And not that Verlander wasn't a phenomenal pitcher early on. Yeah. At one point, it looked like he was almost done.
That's true. We thought that he was going to be just like what happened to Lincecum, where Lincecum just, it was over. From one day to the next, Lincecum was just done, right? And it looked like Verlander, something was there too. But sure enough, he goes to Houston. He's lights out. He's getting extensions, and he's good to go again. Same with Charlie Morton. Charlie Morton, and I'll even be somebody that would admit, like, I didn't know a lot about Charlie Morton before he got to Houston. I knew who he was, but I didn't know that much about him. He had shown really brief flashes when he was in Pittsburgh, but he had a losing record every year of his career for the first 9 years of his career, except for one. And then he goes to Houston, he rips off 14 wins, 15 wins, 29 wins in 2 years. And you're like, wow, Charlie Morton. And he goes, there he is, free agency deal to the Rays. So, or was that a trade? I can't remember. I think it was a free agency deal. I think they signed him, but I could be wrong. Maybe
I
that
think
was
so,
a trade.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but he's 36 years old. And I don't think a lot of people would realize that. Or 30, he's 35. He'll be 36 later this year. So, yeah, he's a guy. So he's resurrected and he gets a win off his former team. Gerrit Cole takes the loss. He gave up four runs, but only one earned, 10 strikeouts in six innings. So he takes the L, but all of the other stats, he helped you out. So we'll see what happens there. As far as stats right there, Diaz with the home run. Tommy Pham, 1-for-3. He gets an RBI on the Houston side of things. Michael Brantley, 2-for-4, 2 RBIs. So there you go. A little bit there. As
Love
far
Michael
as
Brantley.
Game,
yep.
You do? You're a big fan?
Yeah. Yeah. Kind of, you know, like he was a guy that I used to avoid. I mean, look, there's no denying that his skill set, you know, some power, some speed, able to hit for average. But, you know, there were a couple of years there where he was just dealing with injuries year after year. So, I like the, you know, being in the middle of this Astros lineup. So he was a guy that I targeted on a couple of my teams. I believe, do I own him in the pit? Let's see.
You may. I don't have it in front of me right now. But, yeah, Brantley batting cleanup last night. Hitting in front of Gurriel and behind
Bregman.
Yes,
I do, by the way.
Altuve, so, there you go. So, yeah, you're right. When you've got the guys in front of you like Springer, Altuve, and Bregman, provides a hell of an opportunity. Granted, Correa isn't there right now, but Brantley will still be somewhere there in the middle of that lineup. So, good stuff there. We'll preview some other games that are happening today. For instance, Noah Syndergaard going today at 105. Against Steven Strasburg, so a really good pitching matchup to kick off the day today.
Yeah, and there's also an interesting matchup. The Padres bringing up this guy from single A to start against the Giants, and it's going to be an interesting start for him. The Giants have their issues with their lineup, but that's interested to see how he does. But yeah, Noah versus basically Thor, right? We'll call him Thor, I guess.
Yeah.
Against Strasburg, a nice matchup.
Yeah. The guy that you mentioned is Nick Margavicious.
Yes, very good.
Is he thought to be a big time prospect?
No. Right. He reminds me when I read up on him because I hadn't heard about him at all. He sounds a little bit like Miles Mikolas, where extreme control pitcher, doesn't right. really throw hard. I suppose he has a really good curveball, and really not, you know, a lights out prospect, but right. you know, sounds like he's got some skills though, and he's got a nice
just
matchup.
They're just sort of piecing it together at the beginning of the year, right? Just trying to bring guys
out. Yeah, I don't think he's going to...
players. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's kind of like a spot start, but it's still an interesting one.
Interesting time of year to have a spot start. So, to your point, he does have...
That is weird.
People might be looking for him for a minimum salary, a DFS play. So,
absolutely,
we'll come back. We'll take a little bit more look at today's games, last night's games in MLB. In the final part of the hour, we'll take a look at the lines for today's hoop games and this weekend's hoop games. It's Mike and Joe on FST. Thanks for listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. We'll be right back.
From the NFL to the NBA, DailyRoto.com is the place to win millions in daily fantasy. You can get the best DFS NFL coverage all season long for a price of $129.99 or dominate the entire daily fantasy sports realm with the Elite Package at $59.99 per month. If you use the promo code FNTSY, you get 10% off your DailyRoto package. Go to DailyRoto.com, pick your NFL or Elite Package, enter promo code FNTSY, and you'll be on your way to becoming the next Daily Roto millionaire.
Stuff. One of the all-time rock songs right here, Joe Galena. All time.
Absolutely. Love Queen. See Bohemian Rhapsody?
I was just about to ask you that, my friend. I did see it. I saw it on an airplane, so it wasn't the best maybe audio experience, but I sometimes have problems with those biopics, but I did not in this instance. I thought he did a good job. And I've seen people take shots at him for doing mimicry or whatever you want to call it, but that's what those biopics are. I have problems with them because they sometimes tend to be like the same story. So whether I'm watching Bohemian Rhapsody or Walk the Line or Ray. It's like they're sort of like a similar trajectory. They had a difficult childhood. They had or a difficult life. They became their uber talent, made them a star. They struggled with drugs, and they had a second chapter or third chapter of their life that was happier. That's literally the exact same plot to all three of those movies. It doesn't mean that they aren't also enjoyable. So I had fun with that movie. I thought he did a nice job.
Yeah, I mean, I went into it thinking that I'd like it, and I did. I love Rami Malek. I don't know if you've ever seen him on the show Mr. Robot.
I didn't watch that show, but people swore to me that it was a great show, that he was awesome.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that the last season might be coming up, so you could probably still catch it or whatnot. But his likeness, his mannerisms, you know, and this has nothing to do with him, but even just the teeth, you know, making them look like, you know. Yeah. And I thought it was, a good story. I mean, you always take liberties, right, when you're doing these biopics. So,
of course.
You know, did he really say this? But no, and I'm telling you, I dragged my wife. She really didn't want to see it. And then after she did, she thanked me.
There you go. Wow. Look at you. Look at you getting thank yous out of your wife. I don't get those. I'm an idiot. It's probably my own fault. So,
we'll see if I can pick up J-Lo tickets for it. Then that's
I'm going to see Billy Joel next week. Oh, no, is it next
awesome,
week?
No, awesome.
2 weeks. I've never seen him before. So,
really? You're going to love it. I just saw him a couple of Memorial Days ago. He actually played on my birthday at the Garden, but I've seen him like 3 or 4 times. Still has the pipes, you know. It hasn't lost the beat, and you're going to really enjoy it.
Cool. I look forward to it. My wife is a native Long Islander. I currently live on Long Island, so I feel like it is it's a necessity.
Rite of passage.
Like, I have to do it.
Right.
Once I see him, I'm locked in. I'm a Long Islander.
Yeah.
Like, now it'll be official when that happens. So, looking forward to that in a couple of weeks. So, back to baseball. We were chatting during the break. I really just wanted to get your thoughts. It is such a good pitching matchup today. Syndergaard versus Strasburg. The talent level is always going to be assumed to be at the top of the list in Major League Baseball. Strasburg, maybe as he's aged, people think a little bit less of him. But if he ever puts together a healthy season, he's going to be one of the elite pitchers in baseball. Same for Thor. So what are your thoughts on these guys, and how did you approach them during drafts this year?
Thor, I was surprised early in draft season as I was doing mocks at you know, how late he was going. I think he was going maybe 4th, 5th round, depending on the size of the league. But when you look at his past, he's had some issues, obviously, with injuries. I mean, there was even that season where he came in thinking that he was the real Thor, like he kind of bulked up, which isn't too smart for a pitcher and whatnot. Nope. But there's no denying, you know, his skill set. So I think that, you know, if he just takes care of his body and whatnot, I mean, he could end up being, you know, one of the aces on this staff. I think he's going to be arbitration eligible in 2020, so it'd be interesting to see what happens there. There's been no whispers, at least I haven't heard any, about them extending him, but I guess they want to see him maybe put together a full healthy season. But you know, so I mean, I'm a Syndergaard guy. You know, and if he would, you know, it just didn't happen. I mean, I'm only in 5 leagues, but if he was there for me at the 4th or 5th round, I think I would have taken a chance on him.
Yeah.
Did you want me to talk about Strasburg or?
Yeah, I would just say that. Yeah, I'll kick it over to you in a sec. I would just say that the hesitance for people in Syndergaard, I understand, but I think he proved last year 13-4, 3.03 ERA.
Yeah.
He started 25 games. They did limit innings for him at 154 innings, but he had 155 strikeouts. I just think that he's on his way back. It was a major injury and a significant surgery.
Yeah.
I think this is the year where you can expect him to come back. I don't have him. I'm not in as many leagues, so you know, I didn't have my shot. I had already taken Chris Sale in our most recent league, so I would not have had a problem at all with taking Syndergaard a little bit later. It's just in that 14-team league, sometimes it's hard to map out what you want to do. You just have to have a few alternatives ready when you're ready to draft.
Right.
Syndergaard got taken before I was ready. So, yeah, kick it over to Strasburg now.
Now, Strasburg's a guy, I mean, I remember when he made his debut, it was like almost like a mini MLB holiday. I mean, I remember coming home from work. MLB Network had his start televised. And look, the guy, here's another guy that just, if he could just, you know, stay healthy. And I think he's done a little bit of a better job with that. But, you know, you draft him. And in the past, I totally avoided him. You know, I've kind of like softened a little bit. And just say that, and just feel that, hey, look, you know, just realize that, especially with this 10-day IL, that he's just going to spend a little time on there now. But, you know, he's made, let's see, I'm looking at his stats now, 7 straight seasons of at least 23 starts. So he doesn't really kill you in that way much anymore.
Yeah.
But, you know, maybe, you know, gets your strikeouts and has the, you know, the good, put up good peripheral numbers. So I'm not totally against Steven Strasburg.
So So here's the reality for him, right? He had the 34 start season where he threw 215 innings all the way back in 2014. It's amazing to think that this is his 10th season, right? Since then, it's 23 starts, 24 starts, 28 starts, 22 starts. The innings are pretty low, though. 127, 147, 175, 130. 175 is fine. 130, you know, you're not getting a lot of innings out of that guy. And it wouldn't shock me if it's right in that sort of 150 wheelhouse this season. So to your point, he's probably going to spend a little time there, or they're going to give him rest or stretch him out as best they can. Right? They spent a ton of money on Patrick Corbin. This team is trying to still win. To your point about the NL East that you made a couple of hours ago, the NL East – it's funny because just a couple of years ago, I was like, man, this division is a joke. And now it's highly competitive. People expect the Mets to be better. Phillies obviously had the best offseason in baseball with all the free agency signings. The Nats didn't blow it all up. They lost Harper, but they didn't blow it all up. And they'll probably pay Anthony Rendon when they have an opportunity. And then obviously the Braves have a ton of young talent that they are trying to put together. Fulton Evich gets back, they'll have the whole band back together, and we'll see how it goes. So this is a highly competitive division, and these two starters are really highlighting it this afternoon.
Absolutely, and I mentioned earlier, you know, I'm a Yankees fan, and when I was a kid, you know, I had to hate the Mets, but, you know, now it's like, you know, I really love what they've done with this team, and yeah, this NL East, very, very competitive, but I'm liking, I love the fact that they, you know, are starting Alonso, and not, you know, keeping him down in minor leagues, you know, to get control over him and whatnot. You know, I came into the season not wanting to like Robinson Cano anymore. But when I looked at, you know, what he did after he came back from his suspension, pretty much hasn't lost, you know, a step, still putting up big numbers. Love Jeff McNeil, Michael Conforto, Brandon Nemo. This is a nice little team that they have. And if their starting pitching could stay healthy, you know, I didn't even mention Zach Wheeler, right? DeGrom, Syndergaard. I don't know.
They do have arms, man.
Do you think Matt is a lost cause by now?
Yeah, probably. But they do have arms. It is funny because a couple of years ago, they made the World Series just a few years ago, and the thought process was like, man, if they can just keep these guys together, they're going to be something. And they couldn't keep them together, and all of them got hurt, with the exception of DeGrom. Syndergaard, Harvey, Matz, Wheeler, all of them got hurt. So it makes you realize that you do need to have an abundance of arms. And when people, I remember a couple of off seasons ago, people were saying, oh, the Mets have like 7 starters now. They should think about moving Seth Lugo, or they think about should moving Robert Gzelman. No, hang on to them all. Like, I think teams should really do as much as they can to hang on to all those arms, especially in the creative way that we just referenced in how teams use players now. The players themselves are going to want to be starters so they can get starter money. But the teams are it is obviously going to be a tug of war. The teams are going to say, you know what? We're trying to win games here. You're going to be middle relief for now, or we're going to use you as an opener and piece you together with the bullpen, Steven Matz, because we don't want you throwing 150 innings. We want you to throw 115 innings, and you'll be more effective. That's the way we're going to win. You'll stay healthy. You'll make money long term. That's the sale job they'll do to Matz. Obviously, he wants to be DeGrom, but he's not.
Yeah, yeah. And then, I don't know if you want to move on to the Nationals, man. When you look at what they have, too, I mean, obviously Scherzer, Strasburg, we mentioned, they were able to sign Corbin. Even Anibal Sanchez, talking about starting pitchers who have figured it out a bit later in their career, you got to look what he did last season. And, they did let Harper walk, but you got Uber prospect like Victor Robles. I mean, Juan Soto, look what he did once he was called up. Trey Turner, there were talks about him. The Nationals wanted him to possibly steal 50, 60, 70 bases, and he ended up having three already. And Rendon, you mentioned them locking him up. He's now starting to get recognized for being one of the best third basemen in baseball. So, and then, I'll tell you, another guy, Ryan Zimmerman, man. 2 years ago, he was a guy I picked up off the waiver wire.
Totally true.
And was just
right.
Just waiting for him to get hurt again. But you held on to him. So this guy could, I wouldn't recommend expecting too much out of him. But still, guy had 30 something home runs a couple of years ago.
He did 36 homers. So and look, I'm a believer in Bryce Harper, but I'd be remiss if I didn't say that there are articles that I've read over the last couple of years that said that Rendon was the more important player for the Washington Nationals. Now, that those are opinion pieces, and people can think that's nuts, but it's indicative of how good a player Rendon is. He's obviously a little older than Harper, so whatever deal he gets would probably lock him up with Washington for the rest of his career, but it seems like that is being worked on, talked about, and Rendon is really the centerpiece of what, as you said, the rest of the lineup around him is building as a young, very talented lineup with Turner, Soto, Robles.
Yeah, and I mean, would I be sacrilegious? Would it be sacrilegious for me to say, "Hey, I think that maybe Harper might have been a little bit overrated"?
You certainly would not be alone. There's plenty of people that think that. I don't think he is, but there are plenty of people that think that about you. And that I was just referencing that. There's a lot of people that think that Rendon's really the better baseball player. Harper's just a lot of flash, and he had an unbelievable season, but he hasn't been consistent. His batting average has fluctuated. His on-base percentage has always been pretty good. But, some people do think that Harper's overrated, and he's a little bit more flash than he is substance.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at last year, up until July, he had a batting average under 220. I mean, he ended up, coming on later, but a little bit of a streaky guy. And then you look a couple of years ago, he had some issues with the batting average. Don't get me wrong, hard-nosed player. If the Yankees didn't have Giancarlo Stanton having that lefty power bat, could you imagine?
He would have been a Yankee. If the Yankees hadn't made the Stanton move, Harper would have been a Yankee. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's any question in my mind. Stanton effectively blocked Bryce Harper from being a Yankee. And I don't blame them for making the Stanton move. They had to give up very little. I actually think Stanton, who was very good last year, will be even better this year. But his presence did prevent Harper from being here. And the Yankees outfield would have been Aaron Judge, Aaron Hicks, Bryce Harper for the next 7 years or longer. That's what it would have been, which is a pretty damn good outfield.
I think so, yeah. you're right. I don't think the Yankees are
expensive.
They really couldn't.
They can afford it. And it's a funny thing about all of this, and I've talked about this with other hosts. I think, unfortunately, fans have bought the bill of goods that the owners are selling on the relative value of players. Bill James's tweet from this offseason, I think, encapsulates what is a widely thought belief in Major League Baseball front offices. And that Bill James's tweet, for those that don't know what I'm referencing, he stated, if all the baseball players went away, the sport would move on. We'd just get all that was the gist of it. If all the players went away, baseball would be fine. We'll just move on, which is to say that players, you're all just really commodities. There's a few of you that are worth it. The rest are replaceable. 25% of you we could cut tomorrow. 25% of you we probably have to pay, maybe even less. The rest of the 50%, you're all sort of the same ability. You're all the same war. It's just exchanging pieces. That was really the gist of what he said, which I think is believed by a lot of people. I don't think fans should attach their beliefs to that.
That's that's an interesting tweet. I guess so. If you had to,
he shouldn't have done it. There was exposed.
Right,
he exposed what is a secretive belief of a lot of Major League Baseball executives,
and it's going to be used against the owners, right?
Of course.
Yeah.
It's just an additional tweet on that on this topic, and I'll tease it. We'll talk about it on the other side of the break, but it is regarding what teams are telling you they can't afford or trying to avoid the tax, and really what the actual financial picture is. So we'll do that on the other side of the break, and we'll talk a little bit about the March Madness lines coming up today and tomorrow. I'll give you my thoughts on the college hoops games. So it's Joe and I coming back, closing it out on hour number 3 on FST. We'll be right back.
From the NFL to the NBA, DailyRoto.com is the place to win millions in daily fantasy. You can get the best DFS NFL coverage all season long for a price of $129.99, or dominate the entire daily fantasy sports realm with the Elite Package at $59.99 per month. If you use the promo code FNTSY, you get 10% off your DailyRoto package. Go to DailyRoto.com, pick your NFL or Elite Package, enter promo code FNTSY, and you'll be on your way to becoming the next Daily Roto millionaire.
This is a tough one to start off the last segment. By the way, that last commercial did not age well. That was Gabe Morenci and Joe Ranieri talking about jumping on North Carolina. But down goes Goliath. So Carolina blown out by Auburn last night. Auburn unfortunately lost their leading scorer in last night's game, Okiki, with what appears to be a major knee injury. It was a non-contact, just freaky play. He had 20 points on the night. He was going to the hoop on a layup. Nobody touched him, and his knee buckled. It looks like it's probably a significant injury. I think an MRI is scheduled to come today. But Bruce Pearl said he's hurt, and he said it in a significant way to mean that you won't see him back. So they'll be done with him for the tournament. Doesn't mean they can't beat Kentucky. Doesn't mean that they can't continue to go on a run here. Bruce Pearl is a guy who has obviously been under crosshairs before. Chuck Person, a former Auburn player and assistant coach, was involved in the FBI scandal, paying fines and really put the school in a bad light. But Bruce Pearl was able to survive it. He went to the same college I did, so he's a guy that I want to root for. But at the same time, college basketball is really rife with scandal and sliminess, and it's always been that way. I think that's why a lot of college basketball fans just sort of dismiss it. We've known for a really long time that college hoops is slimy. There's runners, there's bagmen, there's all kinds of stuff going on. It's despicable, but I can't possibly tell you how you would change it, because even if you start paying the players, there's still going to be bagmen, Joe. There's just still going to be guys like that.
Yeah, you don't have any players that, with this whole scandal, and I'm trying to, I guess, be funny, but not really. with this whole scandal with students posing they're on athletic teams and whatnot.
So those people are insane.
Shenanigans, man. Yes. Exactly.
Those people are insane, because here's the reality of the situation. People have been paying for their kids to get into college for decades upon decades, maybe centuries.
Yeah.
And it was all legal. Instead, they concocted a Ponzi scheme for something that they could have just done. Lori Loughlin. What's Aunt Becky, as Dan Strafford corrected me last week. I didn't watch Full House. I was a little too old for it, so I never watched it.
Yeah.
Aunt Becky.
My kids did.
She's the one under fire. $1 million bail. The FBI makes a show of this stuff. Everybody knows this. They make a show to take down celebrities so that the rest of the population realizes you can't do stuff like this. Wiretaps and all this kind of stuff. But are you telling me Aunt Becky couldn't get a meeting at USC with the admissions director to be like, look, I really would like my kids to go here. I'm happy to make a donation. I've lent my assistance to USC Film School and teach a course or do whatever. And they would do it. I have friends. Look, I've worked with a lot of college athletic directors and assistant athletic directors in the past. And they would tell you, we get donations all the time for people who want their kids to go to school here, who may be underqualified. However, we take the donation and say it's not a guarantee. Now, how often do they take a significant donation and say no? Not very freaking often, Joe. Not often. So that's you can do it above board. And this guy created this Ponzi scheme and with fake test proctors and all this kind of stuff.
Crazy it makes stuff, man.
It's just, it made the kids look bad. It makes them look bad. I think they're idiots because they could have done all of this legally, especially with them, with the amount of money that some of them have. I don't want to spend other people's money, but if you're a hedge fund manager and you don't want to put down $1 million to get your kid into a school, I don't know what to say. You shouldn't be doing it anyway. They should just earn their way in, but I'm just trying to point out the fact that this all could have been done legally, and they decided to do it illegally for some odd reason.
Right, and you brought up some good points there. You know, just have Aunt Becky in the recruiting brochure shaking hands with the university president.
That's what I'm saying. That's right. Check out Aunt Becky or whoever else they want. USC Film School is one of the most well-respected film schools in the world. So anyway, so enough about Aunt Becky for now. So rest of the day today, you got Cam Stewart and George Kurtz coming up next. It's Weekend Fantasy Update from 2 to 5 Eastern. And then after that, it's In This League with Bogman and the Welsh. That is from that's from 2 to 5. Cam and George are 11 to 2. So apologies for screwing up the time there. So, all right. So I got about 10 minutes left. So we got some stuff to talk about. But college hoops. So you got the injury that I just talked about to Okiki. That's for tomorrow's game. You also have the ongoing injury with Cam Reddish from Duke, who out of nowhere, Coach K was surprised by it, decided that he was too hurt to play. He's got a knee issue. I think you won't see Cam Reddish ever play for Duke again. I just think he's done. But I could be wrong because the injury was a shock to everybody. So I'll have to read more about it today to see whether or not he plays tomorrow. But today, we've got two games, 6:09 p.m. and 8:49 p.m. Eastern. And it's Texas Tech Gonzaga. And right now, Gonzaga is a 4-point favorite, 137.5 over under. Virginia, 4.5-point favorite, 126 over under. I think people will be leaning towards the under in that game because Virginia slows down the style so much. But if I'm asking you, Joe, Virginia Purdue, I know you're not the biggest college basketball fan of the world, but it doesn't mean that you can't have an opinion on these games. Virginia Purdue today, Virginia laying 4.5. I mean, they didn't cover the other night when they played Oregon. They won, but they didn't cover. That was a really tight game. I could see this one being another tight one. I think the value is probably in getting the points here because asking Virginia to cover 4.5-point spreads is not always that effective. Purdue's been playing really well, too, probably even playing better than Virginia. So I would think I would take the value there in Purdue today.
Yeah, like you said, I don't really follow it as closely as you do, but I guess Purdue could be considered somewhat of a Cinderella type of team, and you know maybe they could build upon that magical night from a couple of nights ago on Thursday.
Yeah.
So I think I would take the under in this one, the under. I would take Purdue to cover the 4.5.
Yeah, I'm with you. I jumped on Purdue last year in the tournament. I thought they had a real shot to make a run. Unfortunately, two things happened. One, their starting center got hurt and was out for the rest of the tournament. And secondly, they were in Villanova's bracket, so they weren't going to get there. They weren't going to get to the Final Four, a Final Four that I attended, by the way, and Villanova slaughtered everybody in their way. They killed Kansas, and then they killed Michigan. So I was there to watch it all. So that's where I'm at. I'm taking the points, rooting for Virginia, but taking the points for Purdue. Texas Tech, Gonzaga, that one's going to be the earlier game, actually, and Gonzaga laying 4 to Texas Tech. I've said this before. I'll say it again. I've liked Texas Tech. They've been my big differentiating pick in the brackets. If Texas Tech wins tonight, I'm in good shape. I'm in really good shape in my brackets. I thought that they had a chance to get through here, and I like their athleticism, and I think they have a shot. They killed Michigan a couple of nights ago. Michigan missed every shot that they took, but still, it was an impressive performance by Texas Tech, and I think they have a real shot here today against Gonzaga. But like you said earlier, two different styles of teams. You got one that's a great offensive team and one that's really reliant on defense.
Yeah, and supposedly, I was reading up a little bit on this game. Gonzaga, obviously, number one offense in college basketball, but supposedly they played some defense in their last game, no?
Yeah. Yes, yeah. They were able to limit Florida State. So they're an extremely well-coached team. They have very talented players. People are always doubting them because these people tend to think they play in a soft. Here's the problem. They are a very hard team to evaluate certain years because they are so much better than the rest of the conference. St. Mary's was good this year and actually beat them in the conference tournament championship game, the West Coast Conference tournament championship game. But Gonzaga was regularly beating their average margin of victory in the conference this year was around 25 points, I believe, per game.
Wow.
If you take a few. So they were regularly just blowing teams off the floor. So that is a hard team to evaluate. They earned their number one seed, and they've earned their way here. I didn't think they've played particularly well, but they played better defensively the other night. We'll see what happens against Texas Tech. Gonzaga certainly has more offensive options. But we'll see if Tech can get it done. That really would help my brackets quite a bit. So there you go.
I'll root for them then. I'm looking for you.
Well, thank you.
Your bracket.
I appreciate it. Yeah. I should probably hedge and take Gonzaga with the 4, but I'm going to stick with what I got. I'll take the points today. I've got both dogs. Dogs are 5-3 in the previous round. I'll take them today. Tomorrow, you've got Duke laying 1.5 to Michigan State right now and Kentucky laying 3 to Auburn. Man, Auburn is playing so well. I just don't know how this injury is going to impact them. I would think, and I think that line could change too. Like once it's official that Okiki is out, I think that line could move up. But right now, I think I would take Michigan State. I think across the board, no, I'll take Kentucky. So that's the only favorite I'll take. The other ones I'm going to take Michigan State. I'll take Texas Tech. I'll take Purdue. I think Virginia wins outright. Purdue covers. I'll just say Texas Tech because it lines up with my brackets that they win outright. I think I'll take it's crazy to bet against Duke because of the talent that they have. But now that Reddish is out and that they keep escaping these layup off the rim game winners at the end of the game, I think they might run out of luck against Michigan State, who's playing really well and blew out LSU. So I like Michigan State there. And I'll take Kentucky, actually. I think they can put it together against Auburn. Auburn might struggle with that injury, but the Auburn style of play is hard to play against. It's this team, Kentucky happens to know them because they're in the same conference. So I'll take Kentucky as the only favorite there to cover. So that's my 4 picks. I don't know if you want to disagree with me on any of them.
No. I mean, like I said, you know more about this sport than I do. But interesting that you take Michigan State. Basically, what is it, a 1.5? I'm seeing. So you're picking them to win.
Because I probably have Duke. It's a hedge for me because I have Duke doing well in so many of the brackets that it's a hedge. But Duke isn't playing well right now. They don't run an offense. Right. They don't shoot well from the outside. It took unbelievable performances from R.J. Barrett, who was brilliant last night, and Trey Jones to escape a 2-point victory. Here's one thing I'll say because people are saying, Duke keeps getting so lucky. they got a really bad break last night. Virginia Tech ran a terrible play with about their inbounds play with time dwindling. They took a terrible shot with about 10 seconds left, a contested 24-foot three-pointer that missed everything, but the ball ricocheted off the rim and the backboard, headed towards the out-of-bounds line. Harry Blackshear collects it for Virginia Tech and passes it back out. He was standing on the out-of-bounds line. It should have been Duke's ball with 6 seconds left. I don't know how the official wasn't looking at it, but he wasn't, even though he's right there. So they missed it. So it should have been Duke's ball with 7 seconds left. I'll just say, you know, so that's what happened. You know, they then got the inbounds play with 1 second left because it ricocheted. The next inbounds play ricocheted off of Zion Williamson and ended up being their opportunity for that missed layup. But nonetheless, Duke got a bad break. As lucky as they've been, they got a very bad break with about 7 seconds left. So, all right, that's it on college hoops for now. We've talked NFL draft. We're going to send out that Emory Hunt link right as the show ends. We'll tweet it out to make sure that you great can stuff. Take a listen if you missed it. Good stuff from Joe Galina there and Emory Hunt. And so you were awesome today, Joe. I know we've got a couple of minutes left, but you were awesome. It was awesome to work with you.
Yeah, hopefully we could do it again. And, you know, the mark of a good host is to, you know, keep the show moving. And, you know, you picked up on a lot of stuff and asked me some really great questions. And like I said, it's been a long time coming, and hopefully we could do it again.
Yeah, we will do it again. So give me your thoughts on James Paxton. What do you think of him this year, of today? Give me your, I want the entire picture. Yankees spent a lot of money on this guy, a lot of value on him. So what are your thoughts on James Paxton as a Yankee? Do you like the fit? Did you like the trade? Do you like his outlook this season?
Well, the Yankees obviously needed help at the starting pitching position. He had a fantastic year last year, but 160 innings pitched, that's the most he's ever pitched in his career. I mean, you can't argue with the skill set. So, and, any starting pitching that's on the Yankees gets the benefit of having Judge and Stanton providing them with, some firepower, playing part of this offense. So in terms of today, I mean, I think it's no doubt that you want to put him in any, you want to pay up for him in DFS lineups. But, yeah. You know, I love the guy. I am a little concerned about his injury history over his career.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's always going to be a concern, you know. But I'm looking forward to it. Again, it's a volume of arms. I think the Yankees just need to keep adding starting pitchers because, of course, yeah. Severino gets hurt and Paxton could or Tanaka could. Yeah. CC's having angioplasties and he's 38 years old. Mm-hmm. Like, he's obviously at the end of the road. He's retiring. So you just need a volume of arms. It's not unlike what we talked about with some other teams. It's really the approach now more than anything else. You can't assume that you're going to stay healthy throughout the course of the season. I remember when the Tampa Bay Rays went to the World Series that one year, they had this freaky situation where none of the starters got hurt. And all of them threw over 30 starts. That is such an anomaly that you have to expect that guys will go down, right?
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
There you go. You got Sonny Gray going today. I know a lot of people, Dan Strafford has Sonny Gray and like all of his teams. He's expecting a bounce back there. You got Tyler Glasnow, who I have today. You do?
Yeah. Look, I mean, last year, pitched much better on the road, had a strong spring. His old pitching coach in college is the pitching coach of the Reds. I know that Cincinnati ballpark is a little bit of a bandbox, but I see better days for Sonny Gray. I don't see him as an ace, but he'll have some good starts this year.
You got Yu Darvish, Colin McHugh throwing today, Pivetta, Wilson, Turnbull, Annabelle Sanchez. I believe you mentioned him earlier. So a lot of good Trevor Bauer going today, too. A lot of good pitchers going. We're just getting the season started. It's good to work with Joe Galina. Thank you to Emory Hunt, and thank you to Sean Engel. We're out. Weekend Fantasy Update next.